Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Portland, Oregon-based singer-songwriter James Cook. Cook's new release, under the name Captain's Audio Project, is Waiting for the Moon, and it's out February 28th. In this conversation, we discuss Cook's origins as a songwriter, his appreciation for and the inspiration he draws from nature, as well as how he knows when he's stumbled onto something good in the songwriting process. That's on Into Music, coming up now. My understanding is that you started writing songs pretty young, like around 12. When that happened, had there been like any sort of like creative impulses or anything like that before that? Like, did you write short stories or anything, or did songs just kind of one day show up?
You know, I think it started when I started playing guitar, and that was around age 12, and I just was really enamored of it, with it. My first real instrument was saxophone, and I played that in the fourth and fifth grade, you know, back when they had real music programs in the school. And when I played that for 2 years, and then my parents took me to an orthodontist, which ironically his name was Dr. Funk, and he was decidedly not funky. But he said that the saxophone was contributing to my overbite. And so I got braces, and my parents said, oh, you can play trumpet. That'll push it the other way. And so I actually tried to play trumpet for a year with braces. And that was just, you know, I think that put me off playing brass instruments for, you know, for a while. And then shortly after that, I got an acoustic guitar, and that kind of changed everything, you know, because I felt like, okay, you know, my mouth is not busy. I can actually maybe sing, you know, and write lyrics. And I started out writing instrumental guitar pieces. You know, I was, you know, influenced by, you know, some of the classic rock bands of the time, like Yes you know, the Stones, and, you know, kind of harder rock bands. I actually had an interesting experience. My next door neighbor kind of lost his mind on PCP, and he got institutionalized. And when that happened, he had to give away all of his possessions. And so he gave me his record collection. So at 12 years old, I had like an original version of Sticky Fingers with the zipper on the cover. And I had, you know, Black Sabbath, Paranoid, Honky Chateau from Elton John, you know, just like the cornucopia of classic music from that era. And so I just steeped myself in that stuff, and was grateful for it. You know, eventually he got out and asked for all of it back, but that was, you know, for me, I felt really lucky, because, you know, I mean, my other exposure was just the radio at that time. And, you know, I mean, I heard, you know, what was on the radio, which was some great stuff, but I didn't, until I had that, you know, album collection, I didn't really get to dive deep into, you know, other cuts and, you know, different things and selections on that. So, you know, it really, I think it probably, you know, even though I don't know how I would acknowledge it, it probably had a pretty profound effect on, you know, my future music and what, and the way I perceived it.
So that really is like one of those times where it's like a confluence of things. It's the record collection. It's not being able to play sax, starting to play guitar.
Yep. All happened at the right time. Yep. It was serendipity, I guess. The magic happened right then. Yeah. I felt lucky. It was a way to express, you know, I mean, I was sort of an introvert as a kid, and spent, you know, when I discovered guitar, it was at a time where I think my, you know, just my motor skills and abilities had developed, and I really just would lock myself in my bedroom and spend a lot of time just focusing on learning to play guitar and with the guitar and how it made me feel and the sounds that I could get out of it. And it was a great escape for me. You know, I was kind of a nerdy kid, and you know, I mean, I had a few friends, but I wasn't a super social kid, and so that's what I did. I just spent my time with the guitar. That was my social life.
So when lyrics finally did start showing up, do you remember, like, kind of like, were you kind of trying to, like, imitate some of the stuff that you were hearing, or was it, man, I had a bad day at school, I'm going to write a song about my bad day at school?
Well, you know, I think back then my idea of writing was a little bit more pretentious. You know, looking back on it, you know, I didn't really have life experience to draw off of. You know, I suppose puberty, but, you know, I mean, that's really something that you don't recognize while you're in the midst of it. So I just kind of went with probably a little bit more, you know, ethereal fantasy themes, you know, and yes, it was, to answer your question, yes, it was influenced by the music that I listened to. And it was more about creating stories and narratives that were sort of just in my mind and not reality based at all. I didn't really have the life experience to draw off of to bring that into it. So, you know, like I do now, whatever, you know, a lot of the music I have now is based off of things that have either happened to me or, you know, emotions that I've had throughout life and life experiences, heartbreaks and happiness and all the things that we all artists write about from experience.
Yeah. See, so that's kind of what inspired that question, because, like, listening to the record, it's evident. It appears to me that, like, it's like, oh, this is just stuff that's kind of inspired largely day to day. But there's a trick to that, because I think it's easy to kind of look around and you can strum a couple chords and say, okay, I'm going to write a song about that milk can. But then to have something that works is a different story.
Right. Well, it has to draw in the listener. It has to be something that's connectable, you know. And, you know, I mean, I think if you make a really strong connection with yourself, it's relatable, right? You can actually, you know, if you're going to dig deep and kind of attach to that emotion that you're feeling, and you're able to express it in a way, then it makes it relatable. Maybe, you know, as a, you know, artist, over time, the goal is to just get closer and closer to that pure expression. You know, maybe it was Da Vinci that, you know, that says art is part emotion and part skill, and it's the blend of both those things. And so, you know, over time, you know, the writing, the ability to draw out things verbally and express things as a skill. And if you are able to get closer to attaching those emotions to it, then that's more of a success, you know, in writing, just making it more, you know, accessible to someone else. If you just write something that's so personal, and there's some things in there that are in the album that are personal, but I try to generalize them enough to where they're universal, you know, that some of the feelings are universal. Some of them you just can't, but that's art.
You kept this simple, not only in terms of, I guess, the recording, but it would seem also to me in terms of the structures and so forth, that you're not trying to overly complicate it.
You know, and I have some music that probably could fall into the overcomplicated realm, but this particular album and this particular grouping of songs, it is just a little bit more simple upflight. I mean, there's some that are just, you know, three chord songs. Some of them do have a little bit more. Some of them are more bluesy based. Some of them are really country styled. And I try not to limit myself in that. There was a time where I really was, you know, more heavily influenced by classic jazz. And so, you know, by jazz, what I mean is it was more classic pop music from the period of the, you know, 1920s, 30s. It really wouldn't be considered jazz then. It was just the music people were listening to. But now, a days, jazz musicians use those songs as vehicles, as standards. And so there was a period where I went through learning a lot of that music, and it was really that music that taught me about music theory and sort of broadened my palette of, you know, tools that I could use in the music. So now I'm at a point where, back then I was trying to really incorporate as much of that as I could into the music just to give it some depth. And now I'm at a point where I'm kind of like, well, you know, I don't need to really try to do that. I'll use it if it seems like it's important for it. And if it's not, I'll just keep it simple. You can do this. You can express something with a one chord song, you know, and if it's hitting the mark, then you don't need much else, right?
I think in this instance, that approach also creates a kind of intimacy between the listener and the performer. Was that something that you also wanted to kind of carry out with this? That it's like, hey, come on in here for 45 minutes and let's just have an exchange.
I would say that I'm a pretty prolific songwriter, and you know, over my life, probably a few thousand songs, and I many of them I just, you know, shelved. You know, as you progress as an artist, the stuff in the past you kind of look like, well, I'm better than that now, or I've got stuff that's more relevant, or I'm just into what I'm doing right now. And so I have a bandmate who sort of expressed that he said that, look, you've got all this material. Why don't you just come into my studio and sit down with a guitar and sing the songs and put it out so that it's not, you know, lost. And so it doesn't fall by the wayside. And I in some of the groups that I've had in the past, I was the lead singer, band leader, you know, lead person, and I would get to do a lot of my music. The current band that I have, Trash Can Joe, I actually started it. One of the reasons for starting it was that everybody sings, everybody has songs of their own. And so I wanted to have a situation where I wasn't the focus and that everyone, we could take turns and do all that. The downside of that equation is that much of my music, because I write so much, never gets out. And so when he said, you know, I should do that, I was like, okay, that sounds like a great idea. As we did that, I basically did for this record, I just set up in a studio, sat down with my guitar and microphones and played all the tracks live. And then when we got done with that, you know, we chose the best ones. Then we went through them, listened to them. And because I play mostly a tenor guitar, which is a four string guitar. And, you know, it's this one. It looks like this. It's an old National. It's a fairly trebly instrument. You know, it has the high end, and because my voice is fairly high and reedy, I wanted to add the bass to it. You know, and so, you know, after listening to it, I thought, well, okay, I'm a bass player. I play upright bass. I'll just pull in my upright bass, and I'll lay down bass tracks for all the music. And so, you know, we did that. And it sounded good. And then my bandmate, who's a keyboard player, he said, well, why don't you let me, you know, throw some keyboards on the stuff, you know, and he ended up putting some organ and Wurlitzer electric piano and regular piano on the tracks. And after he did that, it was sounding so good. And we're like, well, okay, well, let's bring in our friend Paul and put some pedal steel on some stuff. And then Paul is also a trumpet player and he writes horn arrangements. And he's like, well, let me write some horn arrangements for some of your things. And so we did that for a couple songs. And I'm very glad we did because, it would have been fine. I kind of wanted originally the songs just to stand on their own and have it be that very, like, you know, just raw thing, which I still think it is, you know, it is still have that raw quality. But I also wanted it to be a little bit more diverse than just every song is just me, guitar, vocals, and dry. And I felt like that would just, you know, it would get a little bit boring, you know. And so adding those little spices and flavors to it just didn't take away from the rawness of it, but it made it a little bit, it gave it a little bit more depth is all. Yeah, the idea was to make it raw and hopefully. I've always been someone that liked recording live. All the bands that I've ever been in have been, you know, just, you know, set up and record live. I don't like to do the heavy overdub things and heavy production. And I don't really like a lot of effects. In fact, I used to say if I can hear the reverb, it's too much. And so, I just wanted it to have that, like you're in the room with me quality. And hopefully people can connect to that.
Being somewhat prolific, not somewhat, it sounds like being pretty prolific. Do you have like a system or a practice about that? Like, I'm gonna sit down every day and write, or is it just kind of like, man, stuff shows up when I'm least expecting it, and then I gotta get it down?
I'd have to say that there has been times when I have attempted to force myself to write. There's that book, The Artist Way. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it talks about how to, get your creative juices flowing by just sitting down every morning and writing 3 pages of whatever. It doesn't matter. And what I find is that I don't do well forcing myself to write. In fact, sometimes I'll go a year without writing a song, and then I'll come up to something. And it's really, more about, something happening in my life, extremes. There's a song on the record called Country Song, and it's the chorus is, my dog is dying, my truck broke down on the lawn, feels like I'm living in a country song. That happened. My dog was dying. My truck did break down. Everything in that song actually happened to me. And so it was an easy song to write. I mean, I was just like, well, all this is going on. Maybe I can make a catchy song out of it. Oftentimes that happens. I was in a band for a while previous to this project, which is kind of overlap, where I was also in a relationship where my girlfriend was just giving me fits. It was very tumultuous. I wrote a ton of stuff about that. And my bandmates actually said to me at one rehearsal, they said, boy, we sure hope that you're always in a tumultuous relationship because you write your best stuff when shit is going wrong. So, and I think a lot of that is true. I mean, you got to feel emotions. I mean, I can, I have the skills to write, and I mean, I could. I think it was, I remember hearing an interview with Beck one time, and he was going to co-write something with another artist, a hip hop artist, and he said, okay, let's write a song about, shirts and pants. I'll be the shirts and you be the pants, And, I've met a lot of artists who can do that too, and just pick a subject and write about it. And I can do that too, but I don't feel a real connection to it when I do. I feel like, well, I'm not saying something that anybody's gonna listen to and go, man, that really speaks to me. I mean, unless you're a Parrish Pants, I guess, but I really like, and a lot of my music, if I do that, I discard it, because if I feel like what I'm writing isn't, I don't have an emotional connection to it, then I'm not going to share it because I don't feel proud of it. I don't feel like it's really, if it doesn't move me, it's not going to move somebody else. So, and there's those moments when I have enough music that does draw out those emotions in me that there's some music that when I'm writing it, I'm just in tears. I'm just like bawling my head off, like, man, this is just really, and it doesn't have to necessarily be a sad song, but I just feel like I'm having that emotional connection and it really just hits me. And I'm like, man, that really, that's it. I can recognize it when it happens, when that magic is there.
Oh no, I mean I know what you mean. I mean, because I write prose, and there are some times where if I'm feeling really connected, I mean I don't know. I mean, I could be writing about something, I don't know, Haitian politics in the 1960s or something, but if I'm really connected with the subject matter, I do get that emotional reaction. It's like, "Oh, this is moving me."
Yep. And that's how you know. It may or may not move somebody else, but it's a much greater chance that it will if it's moving you. And if you've spent enough time with it, that there's a song on the record called There's a Hole. And that's a sad song about a heartbreak. And It was off a pretty serious heartbreak, and it took me, I don't know, 2 or 3 years to be able to play that song without choking up. You know, I had a vocal teacher years ago that told me, that said, look, if you're going to play a sad song, you need to be over it for the audience to get it. You can't be choking up while you're playing it, or the audience will just kind of not get it. You know, so you have to be over it, and you have to be able to play it strong, and you have to be able to just put it out, you know, as a strong piece of music and lyrical content and vocals for the audience. And then the audience will cry, you know, if that's the case. So, yeah, it's a balance, you know, I mean, it's not, when that magic moment happens, you know, and you go, you know, you're like, that's great, you know, it's fleeting, you know, you feel like, where did that come from? You know, it came from somewhere else, you know, I feel like I'm just channeling it. I don't know if it, you know, I don't feel like, sometimes I don't feel like I wrote it. I feel like, well, you know, I don't know where that came from, but I'm glad it happened.
I'm also curious because, you know, it's mentioned that your interest in astronomy and that this was inspirational too. Is being out in nature, like, is that also a good source of inspiration? Just kind of like sometimes the vastness of it, or sometimes even maybe elements of danger or loneliness or something like that.
You know, you really hit the nail on the head for me. I haven't done it a lot recently because my vehicle isn't, my truck isn't reliable enough, but I have spent a lot of time, you know, Oregon has, maybe 3.5 million people in it, and they're almost all in Portland. And so all of Eastern Oregon is just this huge, empty, amazing, beautiful landscape. And I used to go out and I would take my gazetteer, you know, that map book that you can buy for every state. And I would look for the most remote areas and just go there by myself, maybe with a dog, you know, and just try to drive out into the middle of nowhere. And there was times, you know, I would get to places and then I'd look out my gazetteer and I'd be like, okay, there are no roads for 100 miles in that direction and no people anywhere around to be seen. And I love that stark loneliness, you know, I mean, it makes you feel, you know, sort of like a pioneer, I guess. I mean, I don't know, you know, none of us are, there's no pioneering anymore in the world, but to get out in that, you know, into nature, or just away from the city, you know, it's having access to that is just one of the greatest privileges that you can have. It's, you know, not everybody can have it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of places in the world where it's just impossible to get. And I feel real lucky here in the West that there's a lot of open space and I'm able to get out there. And yes, it is an influence on me, and I seek it out. You know, I'm not antisocial by any means, but I do like to get out and be by myself and just connect with the nature and the world out in that way.
You've been listening to a conversation with Portland, Oregon-based singer-songwriter James Cook. His album, As Captain's Audio Project, Waiting for the Moon, is out February 28th. You can learn more about the release via the Captain's Audio Project Bandcamp page. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torn Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast and all our programming at kmuw.org. We do welcome your questions and comments via info@kmuw.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.